Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health one day at a time, discussing the human condition, providing a sounding board for mental health issues, and making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber. To Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media. Google Plus, Mainstream Mental Health. Instagram, at Mainstream Mental Health. Twitter, at Mainstream MENTL. And search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. John Huber. Thank you for listening to our show, and remember to follow us at mainstreammentalhealth.org and listen to us on the Mental Health News Radio Network. Today I've got an amazing person on my show. He's been one of the first people to have me on his show regularly, and he has been called a geek, a nerd, a reader of encyclopedias, but he's also a globetrotter, an entrepreneur, a student, husband, and father, as well as an amazing radio show host who for the last 4 years has been in the top 100 of talk media by talkers. I'd like to introduce to you Ethan Behrman today, and he is the host of the Ethan Behrman Show. Ethan, thanks for coming on my show.
Dr. Huber, it's so great to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you know, it's a pleasure on my side. I'm honored to have you here. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, because I talk about all things psychology, is, man, you have gone all over from Minnesota fighting mosquitoes to San Francisco, and you're on television, on Fox and the Ingram Hour and all these different shows, Carlson Tucker. How do you keep your audience motivated and moving forward? I mean, that is the trick question out there, I think, for all of us in media. But if there's anybody who should be able to answer it, I think you can.
Well, I think one of the most important things is to be topical, right? I mean, what is happening in actual people's lives? What are they talking about, you know, when they sit down and have a cup of coffee with one another out in public? You know, it's not always politics. Sometimes it is politics, what's happening in the news. But often it's what's happening in your neighborhood. This is why I say all politics are local, because what's happening on the school board, what's happening at the city council affect us. But also, you know, just what is going on with our lives. Often we have things happening with our families, so we have to talk about what people are talking about. And I think that's what keeps people motivated, isn't just to talk about what I want to talk about, or if I'm way into a bunch of political circles, what's happening there. That's a narrow audience. People talk about a lot more in life than just what's happening in D.C.,
Exactly. And I think that is the key to what you do. You know, you've never had me on for the same topic more than once. I mean, that's it, because it's always changing and you're always dynamic. You have a good support team, too. How does that play into what you do?
Well, you know, if we want to get behind the scenes, it's critically important. My wife has always been what I call my creative director. She's not just my wife. She's my best friend. She has input for everything. She listens to my shows. Imagine that. And she has great insight into what's going on, but also producers are critically important. They help set up the daily shows each day and, you know, organize behind the scenes. You know, the stuff that happens behind the curtain is really the unsung heroes in not just the radio business, but TV as well. You know, I go on these TV shows and there are 10 to 30 people behind the scenes that have actually made the show happen that we don't talk about. You know, the hosts are just the face of it or the voice of it, but there's so much that happens beyond that, and those people are critical in their contributions to the shows. It's really important. But in my case, yeah, it's my wife. She's number one. She's my best fan, but she's also the number one contributor to helping to shape when I don't necessarily hear something, because I'm the one talking. I don't always hear what's coming out of my voice, you know, 3 hours a day, or out of my mouth 3 hours a day. So she hears that and sometimes will give me really valuable feedback on what's really going on.
Well, and that is key to it. And I understand I have, you know, I think an amazing producer and a good PR team, and they keep me in the loop to stuff, you know, 3-4 days before it hits the mainstream media, and they're telling me, hey, get ready for this. It's coming. And it's like, man, how do they do it? And your secret is your wife. And I think that's amazing. Cause it's hard. It's hard to do everything that goes into a show and stay on top of all the new stuff that's coming out. Cause you're still working on the stuff that just hit this morning, not the stuff that's going to hit tomorrow. And it's critical. It definitely is. So that's your key. Is a good team, good motivated team you support and trust to find your relevant topics at the moment. How do you shift from, say, something in San Francisco to the national media? That has got to be a toll for you, you know, because like you said, all politics are local, and all of a sudden you're on the national platform. How do you shift that?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, it's actually, for me, it's not as difficult because California politics, and I know that people outside of California hate to hear this, but there's a lot of truth in an old saying, which is, as goes California, so goes the country. And so a lot of politics that happen out here are at the, kind of the bleeding edge of what's happening nationally. And there is truth in that. So, you know, if there's a drug epidemic, well, it's kind of hitting out here first, and then it's spreading. You know, the opioid epidemic, I was talking about 6 years ago on the radio, and it took national media up, and it was only probably 2 years ago that we started talking about the opioid epidemic on a national basis, but it was happening out here. So, you know, it's not as hard as it can be at times. What is really probably most challenging just right now, without getting into the politics of it, is the fact that I believe on today's or recent show I said something like, well, California's kind of become the Puerto Rico of national politics, where people want to look down on California. They want to attack California. They want to view it that way. So I end up being kind of a bit of a cheerleader for California on the national political scene, but for good reasons, because California has done a lot of powerful and positive things. Before we had the Clean Water and Clean Air Acts, California was doing that with the California Air Resources mm-hmm. Board, and that really was a model for a national basis. You know, a lot of positive things that have happened really do, as the incubator of politics, or the little experiments of politics that the states are supposed to be, it actually happens most often in California. We're a giant state with a lot of resources, so we're willing to take a lot of chances. We have this direct democracy system set up in the initiative process that's 100 years old now, where the people get to have their voice directly stated, not through just a representative process, but, you know, two-thirds of California's budget is already set before the assembly ever meets because of our initiative process. So we experiment in a lot of ways out here, too, and I love being part of that, and that energizes me for the national scene. So I get a lot of energy and a lot of drive out of the local politics translating to the national scene.
That must be somewhat empowering for you. I mean, you know, because being the spokesperson for Generation X, I mean, you know, we joke about things like that and monikers, but the reality of it is there are certain people out there that do kind of have that ear. And it must be very empowering for you, because you can kind of direct people, hey, this is BS. Don't pay attention so much to that, but look at these things that are really going to affect you at home. How do you manage that? Do you get a lot of pressure from politicians? And
no, I I have a weird little switch in my I don't know if it's how a psychologist is. You're the psychologist here. I have some weird little thing that I swear was genetically given to me. My grandfather was a vaudevillian, a magician, started a family business
awesome.
In the depths of the Great Depression. I grew up in a sales family on my dad's side. You know, my mom's side, my grandfather was an army colonel who fought in World War II in Korea and Vietnam. So I had this weird thing even as a kid. I just, none of that just never fazed me. My uncle, my dad's brother who served in Vietnam, to told me as a little kid. He's like, you know, we're all made the same. Nobody is better than anybody else. And I probably can't say this, and you're welcome to edit it out, but he told me, kick any guy in the groin, and they're going to double over. We're all made the same. And my grandfather, you know, who started the family business, said his title was chief cook and bottle washer. He said, because we're all the same. Nobody's better than anybody else. Treat everybody the same, whether they're the janitor, the CEO, or the president. You treat everybody the same. So I had this weird little thing as a kid that I just didn't matter who you were. I thought of you as equal and treated people that way. And so politicians hold no sway over me. And I don't know if it's a glitch or a benefit. It's one of the two, or maybe it's both at the same time, but it just does not bother me. That's like getting on TV. You know, I'll be on TV tonight, and if I'm on with Tucker Carlson, it's like 3.6 or 3.7 million people watching. I don't even think of it that way. It's just me talking to Tucker. I don't even think about it.
Exactly. Well, you know, and I was brought up a lot with the same way about, you know, hey, we all put our pants on the exact same way. You know, nobody's better than anybody, and nobody owes you anything. So you need to be, and I see this in what you do. You work for everything you got, and you move forward, and you take advantage when you have an advantage, and then you work to get an advantage when you don't have the advantage. And, you know, that kind of leads me into my next segue. What's going on with this entitlement we have, this idea that we all have to be some kind of internet stars? And I mean, even in my private practice right now, I've got a client who got himself internet famous by breaking the law and posting it on Facebook, and now he's going to court for all that stuff. And his attorney's like, something's wrong with this guy. Go test him. Go find out what's going on. And he's just like, well, why not? I'm famous. And now we got this stuff. Exactly. And now we got this stuff coming out of Great Britain talking about how, well, if you watch the Kardashians, you're being taught these things, that artificial fame is very valuable, but in reality, it just kind of makes you a bad person. You do things, you look down upon people who struggle in life and all that type of stuff. So it's kind of crazy and kind of funny all at the same time. But what's going on?
Oh, man. Well, the big picture is we always had this idea of your 15 minutes of fame. And one of the powerful things of the internet and social media is this ability that we all think, and we can talk about this from your perspective too, Dr. Huber, but we all think that we have this ability and power now because we do. We have this device that puts us in front of potentially millions of people on social media platforms. So we all feel like we're stars. And if you go around town, you're in places like San Francisco or Los Angeles, you'll see so-called, and I'm going to air quote around, Instagram famous or Insta-famous type people.
Yes.
They have photographers. They're posing. There's nothing real about it. And that's what I think is truly dangerous, is this what has crossed from your 15 minutes of fame into what appears to be a life or a lifestyle that people have that is completely artificial. It's presented for a camera, and reality television was the first step that way. Social media takes it to the next level, and that's where we as parents have the ultimate responsibility to teach our children about right and wrong and self-esteem, and where we derive self-esteem, and that is through hard work and its accomplishment. It's not through that 15 minutes of fame on a social media platform, but it's what it took to get there, to swim across the pool, to play the piano so well, to score the winning basket in a game. And it's that challenge of not everything is easy in life, or this instant fame or instant gratification, but that it's actual work and achievement is where the ultimate kind of feeling of self-worth comes from.
And you don't get it from anybody else. You
That's
earn
right.
it, you achieve it. And man, that is, I try to tell my clients' parents all the time when I have kids in there, these are things you've got to do. And it seems like a lot of parents, they are more interested in being their kid's best friend than their parent. And I think that's part of our problem on a bigger scale.
Yeah, I agree with you, because parents have to be parents first, which means that we are there to teach, right? And sometimes teachers
Yes.
can't just be there to say that, you know, oh, that was a great job. Well, you know, how about this? And, you know, I know you're working on this, and if you continue working hard at it, you know, so it's not just there to be, we're there to be cheerleaders too and everything else and to be supportive, but sometimes teaching is not just, hey, great job. It's, well, you did really well working hard at it and you did this, and how about we focus more on this next piece next time? It's hard though, because guess what? Parenting is hard. Parenting can suck sometimes, but it requires us to have to make those sacrifices. You know, parenting isn't just all fun and games and oh, you get to win awards. It can be hard work, and it's also the most rewarding hard work that there possibly can be when you see what a human being is able to do and when you've helped guide them to their potential.
That is so true. I mean, really, you're speaking like a psychologist.
Well, maybe I'll work on that in another few years. But no, I mean, it, because psychology matters. Everything that we do, no, I mean, this is really a big deal to me, the idea that everything that we do, psychology is an underpinning aspect of it, right? What is going on in our minds? You know, I'm really into the health and wellness side of the world, and health and wellness is still based on psychology. How do I get myself to make the difficult choice to cut back on sugar? How do I get myself to quit smoking or drinking so much alcohol or getting myself to exercise? That's all psychological. It's spiritual as well, and they all tie together. But psychology underpins almost everything we do, and understanding that and acknowledging that allows us to start making better choices and focusing on what's really wrong in our lives. You know, again, to be political for a half a second, everybody wants to point their fingers at politicians or somebody else or somebody broke the law. This, no, what's going on in your life starts with you, and how you start fixing you is based on psychology and how we make those choices. And that's why I care so much about the work that you do, Dr. Huber, because when we make better choices, we live more fulfilling lives.
I think you're correct on that 100%. I mean, we talk a lot in psychology about control, and control is just an illusion. The only thing we really can control is how we react to the things that happen around us. And these people who go in and they start demanding and people jump and follow through with what they want to have happen, you know, everybody's kind of in this shared delusion that this person is valuable and important. And sometimes they actually develop that because so many people believe it and they buy into it, whether it's the president or the CEO of a company. You know, people move because they can make things happen. But the reality of it is that the only thing we can control is how we react to everything around us and what happens to us. So
we're
going to
get into the locus of control. We're going to talk about internal versus external locus of control. Which class was that for your psychology degree? Did you?
That was in my intro 101 class right there.
But that's one of the most profound statements. It's no, but seriously though, Dr. Huber, that is one of the most profound. My wife, who has a degree in psychology, by the way, I had never heard that, and when she first presented and explained it to me and said and really walked me through locus of control, it changed my life. Because all of a sudden I was like, oh, right, that's right. If I accept that I control how I choose whether or not to respond to a situation, and when I have that level of control, it's one of the most empowering things in the world.
It is, because it also gets you to let go of the things and quit worrying about the things you can't control. But we dwell on, and it drives people to ruin because they're trying to change something they can't change.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that's what. So, you know, everybody's always worried about what everybody, you know, keeping up with the Kardashians. We used to say keeping up with the Joneses. Now we're keeping up with the Kardashians. It's irrelevant what they are doing. Your life is not measured by them. Your life is measured by your own goals, what you want to do. And I've always been a little weird about this one, Dr. Hugh, in a good way, where I'm not necessarily competitive with other people. I'm one of these people. So, like, for example, Dr. Huber, like I said, I'm really into health and wellness and all that kind of stuff. So I started climbing this really big hill. And where I grew up in Minnesota, it would probably be called a mountain, right?
Okay.
And I started doing it because, you know, I have kids. And I'm like, hey, I want to make sure I'm healthy for them and I can meet my grandkids, maybe great-grandkids, mm-hmm. and have my faculty. And I don't care about everybody else, how fast they climb this hill, but I'm like, okay, I can do it once. And then one day I saw, and there was a little bit of competitive, but it wasn't competitive in that way. I saw people who had far less physical abilities than me. I saw a mom, a new mom, carrying a baby on her back up this mountain. I was like, man, she's doing that. You know what? This self-doubt that I have over doing it twice, of course I can do it twice. I'm not kidding. So then I did it twice. And then I climbed the mountain with a Shaolin monk friend of mine, Shifu Wangbo. And he's like, you can do it more than twice. And so then I did it three times. And then my son said, you know, I bet you could do it four times. And it was all internal competitiveness. It's not like I have to race anybody else. And then I did it four times. But internally, I set that goal, and I'm able to do it because I choose to be able to do it. If somebody else said, well, you're going to have to do this, a drill sergeant, I went to basic training. Drill sergeant, you know, that's one type of fear to do it. But it's this right. internal choice that I make, and now I'm climbing it four times. I'll eventually do five because I'm choosing to do it because I have that locus of control inside of me.
Exactly. And, you know, you mentioned your Shifu. It's something that I had to learn because I was very competitive in sports, football, baseball, college football, and then I got injured. And then it's like, you know, okay, I've got to go lift more than somebody else, and I've got to go in the gym, and I've got to, you know, put more weight on the rack than the other guy and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, when I started martial arts, it made me stop and think, wait a minute, all you have to do is be better than you were yesterday, just a little bit.
That's right.
Somewhere.
That's right. And it's so funny that you say it because on this big hill that I climb, there are people who run it faster than me. They do it more times than me. And I immediately think to myself, and better yet, when you really have that idea of internal locus of control versus external, guess what? I'm happy for them. I'm not competitive with them. Why are they faster than me? Why do the Kardashians have more money than me? That's irrelevant. I'm happy for them to have that. They have found their own path to success. However they define it, that's not how I define my own success.
And I think that that's part of what makes you the person you are on the air and the entertainer. People, you're not forcing people to change. You're presenting this attitude and this belief set through everything you do without telling them your story, and people want to be a part of that. And they come and listen. I mean, I hear it when I listen to your show.
Well, thank you, Dr. Huber. I know, I mean, I appreciate that, and that's all I try and do. And you know, it's interesting, not a lot of people know this, I had an entire career before getting into media. And one of the things why I left doing what I was doing to come in and do this is I really felt like there's a Hebrew term called tikkun olam, and that's to heal the world. And Christianity has the exact same concept in the Beatitudes and how we make the world a better place. And I thought to myself, how do I give back? How do I model? How am I a light into the world? Well, yeah, I'm not trying to get all religious or anything like that, but just simply, and spiritually can be non-religious and everything else, but how do we make the world a better place? I've got kids. I want the world to be better for them than it was for me, and how am I able to do that? And I thought this was one area where, hey, I've got some ability here, at least people tell me that, and so how do I model? And that's one of the reasons I love going on shows with people I disagree with is, how do we model disagreeing with one another? Because we need to do that. We need to teach our children how do you approach somebody with whom you might disagree, because you can do it in a healthy way when we're both human beings and maybe we're both American citizens. And so we really actually have 99% in common, and maybe we're disagreeing 1 to 5%. That's such a nominal amount. We really have so much more in common than we don't. And so let's try and figure out all of those areas where we do have, you know, things in common and get together, and let's figure out how to do that and model it for other people as well.
Well, you know, I was going to ask you as we start running down on the clock here, what message do you want to give people? And I think you just told that, you know, that ability to communicate and disagree with people and realize that is the nature of being a human, and the fact is we have so much more in common with each other and very little that we differentiate on. And we act like it is, you know, a nuclear bomb going off and the world's going to be over 5 minutes if I can't convince you to believe like I do.
Right, exactly. And I don't necessarily want to convince you. I want to hear what you think, and you should be open-minded as well once I hear your side. And I think that that is the seed for making a better world tomorrow, is simply taking a moment, at least when it's in good faith, and listen to and talk to people. You know, it's funny, one last quick thought on that is that people don't know that I do is sometimes when I get angry messages from viewers or listeners, I'll randomly pick one and I reach out to them. I've actually called people who send me,
awesome,
I'm not kidding you, and just to reach out and say, look, you know, I believe in you too. I genuinely wish you peace and well, and I hope that you find whatever is missing in your life so you can be happier and not so angry at me.
Wow. Well, that being said, I think that's awesome. I had an incident the same way, and I actually invited them to come on my show, and they immediately stopped returning my calls and everything else because I guess they obviously didn't believe in what they thought so much. But regardless of that, how can my listeners find out more about you? Because not all of them are in California. We actually have some in Florida and Pennsylvania and Texas.
Yeah, absolutely. I used to live in Texas, so I love Texas very, very much, of all the places. But, you know, EthanBearman.com, you can follow me on any of the social media platforms at Ethan Bearman. And there's just new stuff going on all the time. And, of course, all the shows are available online and podcast format, all that great stuff. But just search for Ethan Bearman. It's spelled like the animal bear and man, so Ethan Bearman. And I'd be happy to hear from you as well.
All right. And how about that law degree? You still working on it? You finish it? What's going on?
So close. 1 year left, and I'll be done. I'll have my Juris Doctor, and then I'll take the bar. Yeah, in my spare time, people don't know that. In my spare time, I go to a top law school to get my my JD as well.
Well, just for when you're there, remember I'm a forensic psychologist, and I do lots of forensic assessments and everything. Just
I will be calling you for some therapy sessions. Let me just put it that way, Dr. Huber.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up our show for today before we get ourselves into too deep of a hole. And I want to thank everybody for listening today. I really want to thank Ethan Bearman. Again, an amazing host, an amazing guest. And don't forget to listen to us at mainstreammentalhealth.org and Mental Health News Radio Network. And last but not least, don't forget, life is what happens while you're making plans. So buckle up.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram at Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter at Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.